Welcome to Reset Your Mindset with Angie Z. I'm super excited to have you here today to share inspirational stories from entrepreneurs around the world that provide you with valuable lessons and mindset strategies to enable you to play the game of life your way.
I have a very, very special guest for you today. Today I'm happy to announce that I'm here with one of my favourite people in the whole world, Dr. John DeMartini, who is one of the world's leading authority on human behaviour. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's wonderful that you're here. So you're in town for a few days, so it was good that we had the opportunity to have a chat.
Yes, in beautiful Sydney.
Yeah, most definitely, most definitely. So today we want to have a talk about the mindset. So understanding what you notice between entrepreneurs that, you know, perhaps are doing okay in their business, but how they can really take that to the next level by doing some mindset shifts. So in terms of the billionaires that you meet around the world, what are some of these entrepreneurs not doing or not getting about the mindset?
Well, I want you to just imagine this for a second. Imagine you meet somebody that has a need, mm-hmm. and you care about them, and they're a human being, and you want to help them individually. And you go out of your way and spend your time effectively serving them in some way where you have a transaction and a fair exchange, and they decide to pay you for your service.
Okay.
Now imagine that that individual has a company, mm-hmm. and that company has a challenge and a problem, mm-hmm. and you now go to serve the company and all the people in it, and there's 25 people. Mm-hmm. Now you serve 25 people.
Yes.
And you've now made a difference in not just one person, but 25 people. Mm-hmm. And now imagine that you now go to head of an industry, mm-hmm. who's got a problem with the entire industry.
Right.
And they have 250,000 people in their industry, heads of that industry. And now you go in there and you create a solution that helps 250,000 industry people. Now imagine that you go and do something that hits 50 industries, mm-hmm. and that it's something that's universal. It could be 50 industries. So now the impact that you're able to do, the service you're able to do, is vast compared to what you started with an individual.
Yes.
So some people give themselves permission to serve an individual, mm-hmm. some a community, mm-hmm. some a city, some a state, some a nation, some a whole world.
Yes.
So the problem that you're willing to go and tackle with your service, mm-hmm. will determine the reward you get. Mm. So if you don't give yourself permission to go out and serve vast numbers of people.
Yes.
It's unrealistic to expect vast rewards financially. Mm. So if you're serving somebody that is involved or serving an organization or a group of people that are millions,
yes.
you have the reason to get millions of dollars back. Mm-hmm. So when I ask people, for instance, how many of you are in this room, let's say I'm speaking to 1,000 people, how many in this room have ever used Microsoft Windows and found it useful to be able to go from window to window without having to shut down a software and open up another software? Which we used to have to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And everybody puts their hand up, ever use Microsoft Windows? Well, out of 10,000 people, 9,999 are going to put their hands up. I've used Microsoft Windows. Mm. So that means that Bill Gates, with his creation, served everybody in that room. If I do that, and I go to 50 countries, and I ask 1,000 people in 50 countries, yeah. that same thing, and they all say, I use Microsoft Windows, then that's because he's done something that can serve vast numbers of people. Mm. And therefore, he's received $1 billion as return.
Yes.
So in a long story made short here, if you give yourself permission to go out and do something that serves vast numbers of people, you have the right to request vast dollars, vast rewards for your services. But if you're doing something that is limited to a very targeted group of people, you may not be honored with that type of reward. So if you want to have $1 billion company, you need to do $1 billion worth of service.
Yes.
If that makes any sense.
Completely does.
It's that simple.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So the magnitude of the challenge and the problem that you're willing to tackle will determine the results that you get.
Yes.
And so sometimes people, young entrepreneurs, when they're starting out, have a neat idea. Mm. They project that onto other people, mm-hmm. what they think the world needs.
Right.
Without actually finding out whether the world needs it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if the world doesn't need it, they're fighting uphill trying to sell something to a group of people that don't feel that they need something.
Exactly.
And they're presumptive and projective of their values onto the world instead of finding out what the world needs and meeting those needs.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are the billionaires are meeting vast needs.
Yes.
And they're caring enough about humanity to find what those needs are and then serving those needs in a way that they're inspired to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the smaller new business leader is either projecting assumptions onto the market mm-hmm. and not really meeting needs, or having too small a vision to meet the needs of vast numbers of people, and don't believe that they have the capability of creating such a cutting-edge idea that could serve that very many people, that they don't step out there with creative ideas that could actually get them there.
Mm. Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I do see that quite a lot. And particularly, you know, I meet a lot of entrepreneurs as well, and particularly the research part. So they're, you know, trying to push something onto people as opposed to solving a problem. It's giving them something they need.
If I was just speaking in Melbourne last night, or yesterday evening, with an entrepreneur that's had many companies.
Right.
And he's floated many companies on the stock exchange. And he is really great at identifying what the needs are first.
Mm.
And when he gets the needs, he then finds out what he's inspired by. Because there's a lot of people that see a bunch of needs, but they're not inspired by it.
Yes.
So you can solve thousands of different needs out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that are inspiring to you and serve people, that's the ones you want to go. Because that's the ones that you can't wait to get up in the morning and serve. And people can't wait to get your service. And then the sky's the limit on that.
Yeah, most definitely, most definitely. So just in terms of your journey, so I know that you started educating people really at a young age and, you know, through your chiropractic work that you were doing as well. And you say every night you were doing different forums, if you like, for people. So when did you actually reach that level, you know, that mass level for you? When was that?
Well, my first student was a 375-pound Afro-American woman that wanted me to teach her yoga.
Right.
Because I was her antiparticle. I was really thin and I was doing yoga, and she saw me and she said,
right.
Teach me that.
Okay.
I was so grateful to have anybody ask me for anything. I felt like I had something to offer.
Yes.
I was grateful for that. But I never was able to really teach her a lot of yoga. Then I had a Persian man ask me to teach him meditation.
Right.
And he's still a student 43 plus years later.
My goodness.
The longest student I've ever had. Then I had about 16 people in a class get out of a class and come into a library and ask me to tutor them on mathematics.
Mm.
Well, that was very empowering to me because I felt like I knew something and I could do something. And I got a taste for what it was to make a difference in people's lives. Then I went on to the University of Houston, and I used to sit and meditate and do yoga under the trees.
Right.
At lunch.
Yeah.
And people started gathering around and asking me questions because they didn't see a lot of people do that. I was the only freaky guy out there. So they would gather around, and I had 100 to 150 students every day at lunch gather, asking me questions. Now, that gave me more confidence to speak up and to ask questions, and I love that. When I went on to professional school, you know, I learned by then that if whatever I teach, I learn best.
Right.
If I teach it somebody, I retain it better.
Yes.
And I wanted to excel in school, so I started teaching whatever I was reading and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that 6 and 7 nights a week. The only time I wasn't doing that is when I was attending another class. So I started doing that and teaching. Well, that grew first to the little community at the college I was in.
Yeah.
And then it went to a number of colleges, 3 colleges in the area, junior colleges. And then it went to health food stores and local little community stores.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I graduated, I started doing classes for all kinds of people. The public, announcing it in newspapers and radio, announcing it for different companies. And it grew around the city. And I grew, by the time I was 27, I was really getting known around the city for my work in the health area particularly.
Yes.
And personal development.
Right.
When I turned 28, I was asked to speak at a conference because I had grown a very successful practice.
Mm.
And people wanted to know, how did I do that?
Yes.
So I was asked to speak at this big conference for about 5,000 people in New York. And that opened up a whole bunch of doorways because a whole bunch of people from those cities where they had come from asked me to come speak.
Mm.
And so by the time I was 28, I was starting to speak around all over the United States. By 29, I had reached all but 2 states speaking. And around that time, I started to get international opportunities, first in Canada and in Mexico and then into Europe. And it started spreading through Europe. And slowly but surely, I kept growing it. Then I kept asking, how do I do it more effectively and efficiently?
Mm.
And I met publicists and people in public relations. And I started doing radio and television even more. I started it when I was 27, 28, but
yes.
I really made a concerted effort of getting PR people to help me reach larger numbers of people.
Mm.
And so that opened up doorways in ways that I didn't see before. So I just kept adding little pieces. Incremental change towards a long-term vision allowed me to do what I do today. And now I've got publicists in almost every country.
Yeah.
I do radio, television, newspapers, magazines. I get to do movies.
Mm-hmm.
I get to do presentations.
Yeah.
And I keep a document, a metric of all of that.
Yes.
So how many people do I actually reach speaking?
Mm-hmm.
How many people I actually reach radio, television, newspapers, magazines, webinars, Skype programs, everything. I keep record of it to make sure that I'm achieving what I set out to achieve.
Mm.
And so I keep metrics on it.
Yes.
KPIs, if you want to call them.
Yeah.
But, and I've exceeded what my original goal, and I kept expanding the goal as I went along because I got more effective and efficient at doing reaching more people. And so books, magazines, whatever, sometimes you can reach millions of people in a day by just doing media.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Very true. I love that. And I remember at Prophecy, you had those beautiful books, and everything was documented.
I document everything in there.
Yeah.
And that's thousands of pages now. They keep growing.
Yes.
And I have a service that does clipping to get all that information, so I know how many people I'm reaching.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll do a show that, I mean, I did Voice of America and reached 99 million people in one show. And sometimes I'll have a show that has just 2 million people, and sometimes 5 million people, and sometimes only 250,000, and sometimes 50,000.
Yeah.
Really, no show is too small or too large.
Because
I imagine that if I was standing and speaking in front of 5,000 people, I'd be very grateful. So why
yes.
not? Why am I ungrateful for 5,000 in radio? So I just allow myself to do whatever I can to serve people.
Yeah.
And that helps get books out and articles out. I write for between 40 and 70 magazines a month now. So I'm constantly putting out information to people. And just if you stay with something long enough, everybody else dives out and you end up at the top.
So, John, so we've talked a little bit about, you know, how people can actually change their mindset to working with one individual to serving more people and adding value through doing your research and making sure that it is a problem that people want solved. So I guess, are there any other practical steps that you would suggest to people who are looking to really accelerate their success? What to you is the most important?
Well, I think it's wise to... for an entrepreneur to make a list of everything that they do in a day.
Okay.
Personal and professional.
Mm-hmm.
And break it down into subcomponents of individual action steps, not projects. Don't say accounting.
Yes.
Too vague.
Okay.
What specifically are they doing in a day that's related to accounting? What do they specifically do in management? What do they specifically do in marketing?
Mm-hmm.
Everything that they're doing in their day, personal or professional, to write it all down. Make a very exhaustive list.
Mm-hmm.
And things they would do not just in one day, but in a day over a period of a month. So things they might do on a Tuesday or a Thursday or a Friday or once a week or once a month, put it all in there. Make that list exhaustive.
Mm-hmm.
Next to that list, put another column, column two of five columns, and write down what does it produce per hour or per minute? How much does it actually produce?
Mm.
Which means how much does it actually generating from serving people?
Yes.
That is eye-opening because most people discover that they're majoring in minors and minoring in majors. It's filling their days with things that aren't important.
Mm-hmm.
But actually go through there and look at how much does it produce? Mm. And they'll immediately say, well, I don't know. Well, extrapolate the best of your ability. When I was in practice years ago,
yes,
I did examinations. I did report of findings, consultations,
mm-hmm.
radiographs, blood analysis, urine analysis. Reports, actual clinical care, and public speaking, managing a staff, overseeing reports from insurance. I made a list of everything I was doing, and I put a dollar value next to it. And I realized me actually clinically working with a patient and me actually going out and generating new clients from speaking,
mm-hmm.
that was the highest dollar generating system I could do.
Yes.
The second was clinical.
Mm-hmm.
Then came examinations, and then it went all the way down to radiographs, and I found a priority to it. And I realized then, after that, I put a column next to it, is how much meaning does each of those give? Because sometimes I would sacrifice things that were extremely meaningful to me for things that didn't produce.
Yes.
But at least I want to be aware of it. So I rated it on a 1 to 7 scale of meaning, 7 being high meaning, 1 being low.
Okay.
Then next to that, I wrote down how much does it cost to replace somebody to do it?
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to hire somebody to do that, to make it the same quality of result,
yes,
how much would I have to pay? And then final column is how much time is spent per day that I'm actually spending on it.
Okay.
And that is extremely eye-revealing and will almost guarantee aha and a realization of that people are doing low-priority stuff.
Yes.
And anytime they do low-priority things, they devalue themselves, they devalue their services, and they keep themselves from growing. So they can't expect extraordinary outcome doing low-priority stuff.
Yes.
So if you don't have anything to delegate, you're probably guaranteed to do low-priority things. You can't grow unless you're delegating.
Yes.
You can't grow unless you're prioritizing and streamlining and making it more effective and efficient. So when I actually did that exercise, I realized that I had trapped myself doing low-priority stuff without even realizing it. And when I got through, I realized that the most efficient thing I could do to grow my business was to go and organize public speaking to groups, breakfast clubs, luncheon clubs, events, etc. Because what I was finding out is that out of 60 people, I was getting at least 6 new patients. One out of 10 people I was exposing to was a new patient. The average new patient was $3,000.
Yes.
On average. Cases at average.
Yep.
So if I went out and spoke for 40 minutes at a breakfast talk, and I got 6 new patients at $3,000, that's an $18,000 hour.
Yes, exactly.
If I'm actually doing clinical with a patient, and each office is so many minutes, and it's $60,
yeah,
I might make $1,200 an hour. If I'm doing examinations, I might make $800 an hour. So one, unconsciously, I'm not wanting to do the lower things, so I'm pushing away those things that are needed in the business that I don't want to do because I want to be doing this because it makes more income.
Correct. Yes, exactly.
And so what I was doing is I was actually pushing people out of my office because I wasn't delegating, and I wasn't going and doing what was generating the most patients. So what I decided to do is to target going and doing breakfasts and luncheons and talks, hiring other doctors to do some of the clinical, and other people to do all the other things. And over a period of time, I was able to relinquish everything except going and doing talks to generate new patients and clinically only working with the highest priority patients. I prioritized my patients and only worked with the ones that had the biggest influence or had the biggest notoriety that would allow me to spread out and make a bigger brand. So then I hired the doctors to do all the other things. I made them rotate so no one would own the patient.
Okay.
And I was able to more effectively and efficiently serve a greater number of people, and I grew. So by doing that exercise, I broke through plateaus.
Yes.
I broke through my own limitations of delegation. I broke through the idea that only I can do it or I only know how to do it. By the time I'd done it, they try to do it and they mess it up. I could have done it.
Yeah, that's
all the pitfalls of delegation that were holding me back, I broke through those. And my my practice took off.
Yeah.
And it liberated me to do something that I felt most empowered by. And my self-worth grew, my magnetism grew, and I attracted more people, and I got to do more PR and expose myself more effectively to more people, and it grew. So you always want to prioritize what you're doing and make sure you fill your day with high-priority actions that inspire you instead of low-priority distractions that don't. And also, you can't live at the cutting edge with a new innovative idea unless you're tackling bigger problems that challenge you, that inspire you.
Yes.
Because innovation comes from pursuing challenges and problems in the world that inspire you to want to tackle. That's where innovation comes. That's where genius comes.
Yes.
Well, if I'm doing low-priority stuff, I'm preoccupied with all this trivial stuff instead of getting on with the most meaningful stuff.
Yes.
And so I'm more confident in myself and more self-worth and more income when I'm doing the high-priority things that allow me innovation to keep at the cutting edge that keeps me innovating.
That makes sense.
So it's so important to prioritize what you do and make every staff member that you have working for you do the same.
Yes.
And hire people that are more competent than you. So you're not having to micromanage them and distract yourself from the highest priority things.
Yes.
So they can do it and they're inspired to do it. And if you do, you surround yourself with people who do a better job than you can. Then you never sit there and rescue them and micromanage them.
Yeah. It's brilliant. Yes, definitely want to move away from micromanagement.
Well, otherwise your micromanagement makes micro results.
Yeah, I agree.
You have to give yourself permission to get people around you that know more about than you and not be on an ego trip thinking you need to know more than them.
Yes, very true, very true. And I love that. I think every entrepreneur could, you know, do that activity and get a lot of value out of it, depending, you know, irrespective of how successful they are or how much they want to grow their business. I think, like you said, it would be a good eye-opener for them as well. I met recently with a gentleman by the name, I don't know if you know, Andrew Morello. from Yellow Brick Road.
I've heard the name, that's all.
He works with Mark Burris. He's friends with Jack DeLosa, who I know that you're good friends with. And so he was saying exactly what you've said. All he does every single day, face-to-face meetings, back-to-back, every single other thing. He never spends time on computers, reports, nothing. Everything's delegated to the team.
Yep.
So exactly what you just said. But yeah.
Well, I learned from Mary Kay Cosmetics many years ago to write down the 6 or 7 highest priority actions you can do that day to help you get your dream.
Yes.
And then I looked at what was common to all those over a period of time. What were the common highest priorities that I kept showing up with?
Okay.
And for me, it was research, write, travel, teach. Mm. So every day I research, write, travel, teach, and the rest of it's delegated.
Yes.
I don't want to do anything else. I haven't driven 26 years almost. I haven't cooked.
Yeah.
I don't do stuff that most people do. I don't even have a typical life.
Yeah.
I live traveling.
Yeah.
I don't even have a house to go to.
Yeah.
Because that's not important to me.
Mm.
But so I basically want to fill my day with things that inspired me. How are you going to have an inspired life if you keep filling up with things that aren't inspiring?
Exactly.
And it's wise to also ask at the end of the day what worked and what didn't work today and how do I do it more effectively and efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And keep by asking those two questions, what worked, what didn't work, you can start building a list of things to do and not to do.
Mm.
And not a list of low priority stuff, but a list of real important things that you've proven work.
Yes.
And then you ask yourself, how do I do it more effectively and efficiently? If you can refine that and make it more effectively, you push yourself to more, you break through plateaus again.
Mm.
So those are two questions you want to ask. What is it that what worked, what didn't work today, every day, and how do I do it more effectively and efficiently, the ones that worked? And keep filling it up and put a checklist. If you don't have a checklist, you're a short pencil on a short pencil is better than a long memory with a checklist.
Mm.
You get more done.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. That's wonderful. Wonderful advice. Thank you so much, John, for your time today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Movement, where we help you shift your heart and mind to excel in every area of your life. We appreciate any comments and your support. Feel free to leave a review on iTunes and subscribe to our latest updates on angelinazimmerman.com.